Today is Monday, June 18th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, the United Nations Human Rights Chair calls for the United States to suspend a policy of separating children from their parents.
I call on the United States to immediately end the practice of forcible separation of these children.
However, the administration says it's following laws previously put in place. Plus, how the subject of migration is also affecting European politics. And the World Health Organization adds video games to addictive disorders. It's all ahead on today's International Edition. The United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Zayed Raad al-Hussein, said he was deeply concerned by the recently adopted policies of the United States government. He said the policies punish children for their parents' actions and noted that in the past 6 weeks, nearly 2,000 children had been forcibly separated from their parents.
The American Association of Pediatrics has called this cruel practice government-sanctioned child abuse. The thought that any state would seek to deter parents by inflicting such abuse on children is unconscionable. I call on the United States to immediately end the practice of forcible separation of these children, and I encourage the government to at last ratify the Convention on the Rights of the Child in order to ensure that the fundamental rights of all children, whatever their administrative status, will be at the center of all domestic laws and policies.
Speaking to reporters on Sunday, United States Border Patrol Chief Manuel Padilla Jr. described the agency's policy.
There is no separation process. Again, I'll clarify that. When we prosecute somebody that has violated the law, whether it's a United States citizen or in this case, adults that have illegally entered the United States, and we prosecute that person, as they go through the judicial process, they are temporarily separated from their child or children. And the reason for that is because that child or children is not going through that process.
Is that when they enter the facility or is that when they're taken to federal court? I mean, when in their stay in this facility are they separated from their children?
Yes, when they go to court, yes.
Julian Castro is the former U.S. Secretary of Housing and Urban Development under the Obama administration. He called what was taking place a cruel policy.
It amounts to state-sponsored child abuse. Donald Trump created it, and Donald Trump should fix it immediately. If he won't, then the Congress should fix it immediately.
On Monday, U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen says the Trump administration will not look the other way and ignore the law.
Past administrations may have done so, but we will not. We do not have the luxury of pretending that all individuals coming to this country as a family unit are in fact a family.
U.S. President Donald Trump also addressed the issue.
I'll say it very honestly, and I'll say it very straight. Immigration is the fault and all of the problems that we're having, because we cannot get them to sign legislation. We cannot get them even to the negotiating table. And I say it's very strongly the Democrats' fault. They're obstructing. They're really obstructionist. And they are obstructing. The United States will not be a migrant camp, and it will not be a refugee holding facility. Won't be. You look at what's happening in Europe, you look at what's happening in other places, we can't allow that to happen to the United States, not on my watch.
However, immigration experts and many legal scholars said the administration is interpreting U.S. immigration law as no other administration has. Democrats have condemned both the policy and the administration's rationale for pursuing it. The United States House of Representatives is expected to vote on major reforms to U.S. immigration law this week. Two Republican bills would provide legal status to hundreds of thousands of undocumented immigrants brought to the United States as children, making sweeping changes to legal immigration and boost U.S. border security. It is unclear if either will attract enough votes to pass. Here are some other headlines and stories from around the globe. Iraqi Shiite forces and Syria accuse the United States of hitting their troops inside Syria with an airstrike. It's a charge the U.S. denied but ratcheted up tensions in the area. German authorities on Monday detained the chief executive of Volkswagen's Audi division, Rupert Stadler, as part of a probe into the manipulation of emissions controls. Macedonia's government on Monday set in motion the process of ratifying an initial agreement with southern neighbor Greece, under which it will change its name to North Macedonia and hopefully end a bitter 27-year dispute. For expanded coverage to these stories and more, be sure to visit our website, voanews.com, or download our mobile application to take the stories with you. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study led by researchers at the University of California, Berkeley, found evidence that we humans are causing the world's mammals to become more nocturnal. Published in the journal Science, the new study is said to be the first to determine the effects humanity is having on the day-to-day activities of wildlife around the planet. To reach their findings, the researchers analyzed data on 62 species across six of the world's continents. The animal behavior data they studied was collected using a variety of methods, including direct observation and remote-controlled cameras. According to the paper's lead author, Caitlin Gaynor of Berkeley, animals throughout the world responded strongly to all types of human disturbance, even when people weren't posing a direct threat. She says this suggests that just our mere presence is enough to disrupt their natural behavioral patterns. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Spain's Maritime Rescue Service says it has brought to safety 152 migrants attempting to enter Europe by sea, while a boat of 54 more people is still missing. The service said on Monday that it found three inflatable rubber boats carrying a total of 102 migrants in the western Mediterranean Sea, while a rescue vessel transferred to Almeria 50 people, which had docked on the tiny Spanish island of Albarán. A day after hundreds of migrants were allowed to dock at a Spanish port after being refused permission by Italy and Malta, the divisive issue of migration is threatening the coalition government of German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Her interior minister wants to toughen asylum rules. The chancellor is also to meet French President Emmanuel Macron on Tuesday ahead of a crucial European Union summit later this month. The issue has upended European politics, most recently in Italy, with the formation of a populist coalition. Benoit Kuttmark is a senior lecturer in global studies at Australia's RMIT University. He told VOA's Victor Beatties, Rome's refusal to allow the Aquarius to dock put the spotlight back on Europe's inability to rally around a single unified migration policy.
The reason why this particular situation manifested itself is because the new government in Italy, and certainly very much characterized by the policy of Matteo Salvini, who is he comes across as a hardline advocate for border controls. He was the one who said that Italy had been for too long accepting refugees as the first point from particularly Africa. And he said that the time had stopped to turn Italy into a refugee camp, and he didn't want Italy becoming a refugee camp for Europe. So his argument has been that other countries need to also shoulder the burden, which they have been reluctant to do so far.
The leaders of France and Germany meet on Tuesday. This obviously is going to dominate their talks.
Yes, it will be, because both countries are facing problems on that front too, particularly Germany, because Angela Merkel's government is divided in terms of how to respond to this. The German interior ministers, particularly at odds with his chancellor on the subject of dealing with refugee intakes and the regulation behind it and borders and so forth. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that, whether there's a unified front between the two major European powers, because this is a problem that's only intensifying.
You have top officials in Europe, the interior minister of Germany, as you indicated, joining his counterparts from Italy and also Austria in forming what's called an axis of the willing to oppose illegal immigration.
Yes, this so-called axis of the willing, as you point out, can also be built or has built upon, for example, resistance to the new arrivals by, for example, individuals such as Viktor Orban of Hungary, who's led the grouping known as the Visegrad countries in terms of how they cope or not cope, as it were, in some cases, with the refugee arrivals. So they have formed a split group from the general EU consensus as to how to deal with this and have developed an approach that deals with, for example, the necessary creation of detention centers, the control at exit and entry points, and, of course, a firmer border control. So all of this is actually very much a counter to the standard notion of acceptance that's generally characterized EU policy when it comes to arrivals.
But Oikarmark said the rise of populism is a result of deep suspicion of the EU bureaucracy among elected governments and European unity will continue to be threatened unless a coherent migration policy can be reached that is viewed as equitable. An earthquake hit an area of Japan's city, Osaka, causing minor damage but killing at least 3 people. The Japan Meteorological Agency measured the quake to be a magnitude 6.1, while the United States Geological Survey recorded it as magnitude 5.3. Reuters' Matthew Laratonda has the details.
The 6.1 magnitude tremor came during the Monday morning rush hour. Local media say 2 of the deaths, including a child, were caused by a wall collapse. A third person was killed by a bookcase. The quake brought much of Osaka to a standstill, forcing people off trains and shutting down factories. It's also cut off natural gas for over 100,000 homes. And it's estimated that it might not be restored for up to 12 days. Luckily, there's been no tsunami warning triggered or damage reported at the country's nuclear power stations. In 2011, an earthquake and the tsunami that followed killed 18,000 people and caused one of the world's worst nuclear disasters.
That was Reuters' Matthew Laratonda reporting. Scott Chenal is an American university professor living in Hirakata City, just outside of Osaka, Japan. I reached him via Skype.
I was having a very relaxing cup of coffee and checking the news on the internet, and then all of a sudden, the whole world started to shake. And I've been through a few earthquakes here, some moderately large ones, maybe 5s, but this one actually frightened me. I've never gotten up out of my chair and left a building or a room because of an earthquake before, but today I set my phone down and ran outside because the whole thing was shaking.
Now, you said you've been through other earthquakes in the past. What was different about this one?
Usually the other ones started a little bit slower. They would kind of warm themselves up before they really started to shake. This one just started all out, right, full out in high gear.
Scott, whenever I see earthquakes in the Osaka region, Kobe, etc., I always think about the giant Kobe earthquake. Did that run through your mind?
Well, and I was too, because...
Well, and that's overdue, right? The big Kobe quake is overdue.
Yeah, and one of my buddies helpfully sent me a message, said, yeah, the Kobe, the Hanshin, big Hanshin earthquake started out with a 6 the first day, and then the next day it was a 9. And so I'm like, I don't need to know that. So I'm not entirely sure if I want to stay in the house tonight or if I want to go get in the car and drive out into the country a little bit and just sleep there tonight.
Well, if you opted to do that, how far away would you think you need to go? Because you look at the Japanese reports of the earthquake and you see the Shindo map, right? I mean, it's a fair amount of distance before you get out into the 2 and 3 range.
Well, the main thing for me would be just the house not falling on me. So technically, I live next to a parking lot, so I could just go into the parking lot and I'd feel comfortable with it. There's no buildings tall enough where I'm at right now that would be able to land and get that kind of distance, I believe.
That was Scott Chenal, an American university professor who's living in Japan. He spoke to us via Skype. This is International Edition.
Hello, I'm Lenor Moudou, host of Health Chat. Join us this Tuesday as we take a look at albinism, a congenital disorder characterized by the complete or partial absence of pigment in the skin, hair, and eyes. Our guest is Mpo Tiope, South African author, inspirational speaker, and albinism activist. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat, this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll look into the controversial topic of term limits for African leaders. Many heads of state disdain the restriction in order to maintain a grip on power. Term limits versus leaders for life on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
From the Voice of America, this is International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. Indonesians caught launching big unmanned hot air balloons could face up to 2 years in jail or a fine of up to $35,000. That's the word from authorities after balloons launched to celebrate the end of the Muslim fasting month forced pilots to divert flights. VOA's Penny Dixon has more.
Balloons, along with fireworks, have long been part of festivities like Eid in Indonesia, which is home to the world's largest Muslim population. But with modern materials and designs, they've become much bigger. The Transportation Ministry says some balloons are up to 10 meters in diameter and more than 20 meters high, and warned of penalties Monday. Air Transportation Director General Agus Santoso said some balloons had been reaching cruise altitude at level of 10,000 meters above sea level. The Transportation Ministry issued its statement after pilots sighted dozens of balloons in the skies over the archipelago in the days after Eid, which fell on Friday in Indonesia this year. Most of the sightings were over the provinces of Central and East Java. Novi Rianto is the head of AirNav Indonesia. Rianto said the balloons posed a very significant hazard, and there had been 84 sightings over the weekend, prompting complaints from dozens of domestic and international pilots. He said in a statement, yesterday a great deal of traffic could not travel on routes and had to ascend to avoid these balloons. Rianto added that the airspace over Java was the fifth most crowded in the world and served as an international crossing. As a result of the balloons, AirNav Indonesia had blocked off part of that air corridor for other aircraft, calling it a major disruption. Indonesia has a patchy air safety record. According to the Aviation Safety Network website, there were 12 accidents in 2016 in which 30 people died. Santoso urged the public to follow rules that balloons must be tethered and flown at a maximum height of 150 meters or lower near airports. A spokesman said via text message that police in East Java had confiscated 43 balloons before they could be launched. Penny Dixon, VOA News.
For the first time, the World Health Organization is adding gaming disorder to the section on mental and addictive disorders in its new international classification of diseases. The ICD provides data on the causes of thousands of diseases, injuries, and deaths across the globe and information on prevention and treatment. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the ICD launch at WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The International Classification of Diseases was last revised 28 years ago. Changes which have occurred since then are reflected in this edition. Gaming disorder has been added to the section on mental and addictive disorders because demand for services to tackle this condition has been growing. Gaming disorders usually are linked to a system of rewards or incentives, such as accumulating points in competition with others or winning money. These games are commonly played on electronic and video devices. World Health Organization officials say statistics, mainly from East and South Asian countries, show only a very small 2-3% of people are addicted to gaming. Director of WHO's Department for Mental Health and Substance Abuse, Shekhar Saxena, describes some of the warning signs of addictive gaming behavior.
Be careful if the person you are with, a child or other person, is using gaming in an excessive manner. If it is consuming too much time and if it's interfering with the expected functions of the person, whether it's studies, whether it's socialization, whether it's work, then you need to be cautious and perhaps seek help.
In the previous WHO classification, gender identity disorders such as transsexualism were listed under mental and behavioral conditions. Saxena says this now has been moved to the chapter on disorders of sexual behavior along with some other conditions.
The people with gender identity disorder should be not categorized as a mental disorder, because in many cases, in many countries, it can be stigmatizing and it can actually decrease their chances of seeking help because of legal provisions in many countries.
A new chapter also has been added on traditional medicine. Although traditional medicine is used by millions of people worldwide, it never before has been classified by WHO in this system. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Athletes from the rival Koreas will march together under a single flag in the opening and closing ceremonies of the upcoming Asian Games in Indonesia, officials said on Monday. In another tension-easing step since last week's summit between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Sports officials from the two countries also agreed in talks to field combined teams in some unspecified events at the Asian Games, which are set to begin in August. And one final note today, back in 1983, astronaut Sally K. Ride became America's first woman in space as she and four of her colleagues blasted off aboard the space shuttle Challenger on a six-day mission. In 1815, Napoleon Bonaparte was defeated by British and Prussian troops in Belgium. Patrice Martin directed today's program. John Dryden engineered the broadcast. But before I go, I want to thank you for spending part of your day with us. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a magnificent Monday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has expressed deep concern over the arrest, once again, of renowned human rights lawyer Nasreen Sotoudeh. State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert said in a written statement that Ms. Sotoudeh was reportedly arrested at her home June 13th and taken to Evin Prison, the notorious prison the U.S. Department of Treasury designated last month in connection with its involvement in the government of Iran's human rights abuses. Ms. Sotoudeh's husband, Reza Khandan, reportedly told the Iranian student's news agency that the agents who detained her said she must start serving a 5-year prison sentence, but that neither he nor his wife were informed about what crime she had supposedly committed. Ms. Sotoudeh, who previously spent 3 years in prison on trumped-up national security charges, is one of the most prominent human rights defenders in Iran. Her clients have included political dissidents like Nobel laureate Shirin Ebadi, members of the Baha'i community, as well as abused women and children. In 2012, she received the prestigious Sakharov Prize from the European Parliament for her dedication to human rights and freedom of thought. In recent weeks and months, Ms. Sotoudeh has been vocal on a number of issues. She has criticized Iran's judiciary over its decision to allow an individual charged with security crimes to only choose a defense lawyer from a state-approved list of 20 people. She has also represented several women who were arrested for peacefully protesting the compulsory hijab. Since January, dozens of women in Iran have been detained for removing their hijab in public. Spokesperson Nauert noted that Ms. Sotoudeh has spent the past several years harassed by the Iranian regime for daring to defend the rights of those in Iran. Human rights monitors have also denounced Ms. Sotoudeh's arrest. Amnesty International referred to it as an outrageous attack on a brave and prolific human rights defender. Human Rights Watch called her a champion for her tireless defense of the rights of the Iranian people. State Department spokesperson Nauert said the United States applauds Ms. Sotoudeh's bravery and her fight for the long-suffering victims of the regime. We call on Iranian authorities to release her immediately, along with the hundreds of others who are currently imprisoned, simply for expressing their views and desires for a better life.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.